From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up at Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Amid the crisis in the White House, with the super spread of the coronavirus through the top echelons of government, a massive congressional report on the big four tech companies got little notice. The Antitrust Subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee released the 450-page report that, among other things, called out Apple, Facebook, Google, and Amazon for their monopoly business practices. The report went further in calling for the companies to limit their acquisitions and even break up into smaller entities. My guest is Jessica Gonzalez, co-CEO of Free Press and co-founder of Change the Terms, an organization dedicated to reducing hate in tech. Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
How significant is this report? I mean, obviously, the big tech companies have been accused of being favorable to the right by allowing and enabling so much hatred and white supremacy, but the right has also turned around and claimed bias. Was this a bipartisan effort? And if so, was that significant about it too?
I would say the most significant thing about this report is the breadth and the depth of what they looked into, almost 400 pages, a deep dive into competition, probably the deepest dive we've seen into competition in decades. And it's really incredibly well-sourced and well-done. And what they found was that Facebook, Google, and Amazon have monopoly power in their respective markets, and that they're exerting that power in anti-competitive ways.
So the antitrust laws that exist in the United States were written for just this type of monopoly, but they haven't been enforced in recent years, right?
Right. That's one of the things that the report discusses. What are the next steps? Now that we have a better understanding of how these platforms are abusing monopoly-type power, what do we do about it? And they offer several recommendations for better enforcement, resources to the agencies that are in charge of enforcement, slight revisions to the Sherman and the Clayton Acts so that they can be operative and relevant in the digital age, and other types of tweaks and congressional oversight that is necessary to hold these companies accountable to the American people.
One of the things that the subcommittee said in its report was that these four companies, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, and their business practices determine how their power affects our economy and our democracy. Can you go through some of the ways in which this is happening? I mean, you know, these are companies that, especially on the economic front, we're told these are drivers of the U.S. economy. They power the economy. And there was a time when, of course, these were all small companies that started out and have become absolutely, you know, transnational level giants. So how did the subcommittee find out or explore the impacts of these four companies on the rest of the U.S. economy, and also on how they undermine our democracy?
Okay, what the report found was not just that these companies have dominance in their markets, but that they're using that dominance to disadvantage their competitors. So for example, they found that Facebook, which tracks all the data of its users, both individuals like you and me, but also the companies that run services or offer services over the platform, and it was using the data it collects about its competitors on its own platform to devise strategies to either buy out competitors or engage in contracting in unfair ways that advantage Facebook over its competitors. It found that Google would preference its own services in search. So for instance, you might have missed it if you blinked too long, but Google used to have an online marketplace called Frugal, which even though that marketplace was unsuccessful because it was not user-friendly, it used to show up in Google's search, even though it really it wasn't attaining the type of attention that usually is required to show up high in the search results. So it's not just that these guys are big, it's that they're big, they have some dominance in markets, and they're using that to further entrench themselves as barriers to entry for other participants. So you're absolutely right. Yes, they were once small, but they're acting in a way that prevents the new Facebook, the new Google, the new Amazon, to maturing into the market and actually competing. And that's just bad for consumers. One of the other findings that came out of the report is that when these companies have less competition in their markets, that they actually perform less well, their services degrade in quality, and that they have even more incentive to collect our private data and abuse our privacy as users. So when there is more competition in the market, they're less likely to behave in that way. And I will say, we saw this firsthand with Facebook in our campaign over the summer, Stop Hate for Profit, which looked to hold Facebook accountable for rampant hate and disinfo. We pulled down over 1,100 advertisers. They paused advertising in the month of July. And Facebook really just, you know, tried to ignore us. We could see there how its dominance, its sheer dominance, allows it to engage in abusive behavior with a real lack of accountability.
So we basically have a situation where these four big tech companies managed to take advantage of the economy as it was when they were small, only to now become these massive companies that have turned into gatekeepers, right? And in fact, this was a term that the Congressional Subcommittee used in their description, in their report, in describing these companies as gatekeepers. They are also gatekeepers to our democracy, because, of course, they, for example, Twitter, although Twitter wasn't one of the big four tech companies that the Congressional report covered, Twitter allows President Donald Trump to keep up his tweets, that those same tweets, which are in violation of Twitter standards, would be taken down if the rest of us posted them. But in making their choice to allow a president to spew hate or spew misinformation, aren't they also impacting democracy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and we've been back and forth with Facebook over just this. There is rampant disinformation on Facebook about the election, about voting, about COVID-19 that is impacting the health and safety of people just generally, but also the health and safety of our democracy. Facebook removed, or said that it will remove, QAnon groups from its platform. QAnon is a vast conspiracy theory group spreading tons of hate, spreading tons of disinformation. But the truth of the matter is QAnon never would have gotten so big and had such an enormous megaphone had Facebook not given it a platform in the first place. So the impacts on our democracy are vast, wide-reaching, and there needs to be action now. Facebook has shown that it refuses to act when civil rights activists and activists on behalf of our democracy demand that it intervene and moderate content in a way that protects our democracy and protects the health and safety of people around the world. So it's time for more action. And I'm encouraged by this report. I'm encouraged by the incredible work and thought and deep research that went into it. I think we do need to examine the power dynamics and the business incentives and how our public policy has failed to address them, and the impacts on our democracy, the impacts on our access to quality local news and information. That was another, I think, key finding of the report, is that Google and Facebook have so much control over the distribution of news and information, and they've proven that they have not done a good job at distributing that in equitable ways. They've certainly taken advertiser dollars away from traditional journalism outlets, And what we're seeing is a real lack of especially local news and information that we can use to make good choices when we go to the polls, but also good choices about all the other things in our life, whether we should send our kids back to school or not, right? Like, this is happening right here in LA County, where we're all trying to figure out what is the best way forward to keep each other safe. And, you know, unfortunately, this is happening around the country and around the globe. And Facebook and Google have played a detrimental role in access to quality information.
Now, some of the bases of the report were on the congressional hearings that the big four tech CEOs, Sundar Pichai, and Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, and Tim Cook of these four companies, the hearings that they testified during in front of Congress, they're also expected to testify later this month, in fact, right before the election, on Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a section that Trump has just recently, been railing against. On October 6th, he had a one-sentence tweet in all caps. This was part of his, you know, possibly steroid-affected Twitter storm, where he simply said, repeal Section 230. What is Section 230, and why are the big tech CEOs going to be testifying around it?
Well, first, I think we should make no mistake that this is pure politics on Trump's part, but certainly not good or even minimally thought out public policy. At Free Press, we actually support Section 230. We are open to slight tweaks and modifications to make sure that online platforms are held accountable. However, Section 230 is actually really important if we want to make sure that platforms are able to accurately and responsibly moderate content on their sites. Before Section 230 was in place, the platforms had liability if, for the third party content posted on their site, if and only if they moderated content on their site. So the incentive for moderating content and taking down disinformation and racism and other forms of hate speech was very low. If I'm a general counsel for one of these tech platforms and I know that if I moderate content, we could be held liable for millions of pieces of content per day, I'm probably advising them not to moderate content. If I know that there is a bit of leeway and that we will, you know, scale up robust content moderation. So certainly I think there's room for debate about Section 230. Whether it offers too much protection, whether, you know, online platforms have gotten away with too much. However, I think that Trump is weaponizing 230 and the debate around 230 for his own purposes. We actually sued Trump for an executive order he issued a while back, where he essentially, it was a temper tantrum in response to Twitter flagging a piece of content that he posted for its inaccuracy. So really what Trump is trying to do here is scare social media companies out of holding him accountable for when he lies and when he spreads racist hate. But the truth of the matter is, and the polls tell us, that across party lines, people want social media rules to be applied evenly across people. So that means if you're the president of the United States, you don't get special treatment to hate, harass, and spread rapid and tons of disinformation that really affects our democracy. And so with Section 230, I think we have to move carefully here. I'm not a fan of how the president is wielding his power. I think it's likely unconstitutional as well.
So let's talk about what the next steps are for this subcommittee. This is the antitrust subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee. What are the next steps that follow from this 400-page report that they issued? I mean, it's pretty amazing to see them start to hold these huge companies accountable.
Well, you know, I really think the next step is taking some of these recommendations for remedies and moving forward with them, inquiring more deeply, starting to draft language and legislation that will address some of the market failures that we're seeing here, and working with the Senate to try to hold these companies accountable. There's not many legislative days left in this year, but in 2021, I hope this will be a top priority for the Congress.
Right. I mean, certainly the Senate has become, as controlled by Mitch McConnell, has become a legislative graveyard, as many have called it. He's not interested in anything other than confirming right-wing justices and judges, federal judges, to the court system and the Supreme Court justice. So I want to just switch gears in the last part of our program today, because you're somebody who works at Free Press on the issue of reducing hate in tech. And recently, your organization, freepress.net, helped publish, facilitated the publishing of a very important report called Media 2070, An Invitation to Dream Up Media Reparations. Tell me about this report. It's a fascinating report looking at, what are media reparations? This is a term that I hadn't heard before.
What are media reparations? You all tell us. You know, listen, I'm so proud of and excited about this report. It's an invitation for us to dream about a reparative media system. It's an invitation for us to learn about the history of discrimination in our media dating all the way back to our founding. It was a report that was compiled by my Black colleagues at Free Press that really focuses on anti-Black discrimination in the media and the government's role therein. So one of the things they were able to dig up, it's been over a year in the making, this report, and one thing they were able to dig up was that the prominent practice of newspapers running runaway slave ads, and that was a major part of early newspaper business models. So for instance, there is a runaway slave ad that Thomas Jefferson placed all the way back in the day when one of his slaves escaped. And it takes us from that time when postmasters in different parts of the country were refusing to deliver Black newspapers all the way up to the present, all the way through the FCC licensing process and how radio broadcasters gave platforms to the Ku Klux Klan, all the way up through, cable news, radio, hate speech, and all the way up through the current situation, internet service providers fighting against net neutrality so that they can discriminate against content on the internet, and all the way up through big tech and the role of causing immense harm that big tech has played. And what the paper does at the end is it actually invites folks, and particularly Black folks, to come together and dream about what media reparations should look like. So this is an organizing project. It's an invitation to talk about the harm, to heal, to move towards reconciliation and repair, and to talk at some point about what are the remedies for this really problematic start to our democracy. Like, when you think about how important the media is to shaping our beliefs and our understanding about our neighbors, and you see how for the first giant chunk and all the way up to today, how the media has been weaponized against Black people and other people of color, but certainly Black people. There's a real question that we as a country and as a global community need to ask ourselves about what's the damage that's been done? How do we repair so that we can build the multiracial democracy that we are striving for?
And of course, between now and November 3rd, we see, you know, the kind of hate speech coming from not just our president, but being amplified in social media from the president's supporters. And you know, even though our current media landscape is slowly starting to acknowledge that we live in a white supremacist country with a white supremacist president, unfortunately, I think for far too long, everything Trump was doing was being somewhat normalized, right? I mean, even if they've come to their senses and are covering the situation a little bit more closely, so much damage has been done, but progressives, people of color, were calling attention to Trump and what he has wrought 4 years ago.
We have a lifetime of unlearning to do here. We've been taught, we've been led astray, and so I think that's what in part the essay invites, is that's for us to reimagine what a healing and reparative media looks like, but from our textbooks all the way to mainstream media to social media, there's been a lot of harm done, and we need to erase a lot of, frankly, untrue stories about people of color that have been mainstreamed by the media.
And where can people find out how to get a hold of this report that we've been talking about?
Well, you can follow Free Press, freepress.net. The report is called Media 2070. They have a Twitter handle, at Media 2070. We're, of course, at Free Press. And you can look for my colleagues, Joe Torres and Colette Watson and Alicia Bell. They were the core authors of the piece. They're also on social media, and they're all connected up to the Free Press family.
We will post a link to both this report about media reparations, as well as the Congressional Subcommittee's report that we were discussing earlier, on our website, risingupwithsonali.com. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Jessica Gonzalez, co-CEO of Free Press, co-founder of Change the Terms, an organization dedicated to reducing hate in tech. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and we're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.